They've got a lot on their minds. So let's get to it. You're listening to Wake Up with Finch and Kane, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Good morning, and welcome to Wake Up, your radio home for truth, justice, and democracy. I'm Melissa Kane, and I'm here along with my buddy and co-host, Bill Finch. And as we like to say, this is your radio home if you're tired of our country being divided and manipulated, tired of the right-wing screamers of talk radio, tired of the science deniers, the bullies, and climate deniers flooding the zone, and tired of those who won't fight for you. And listener, if you are reeling from the events of the last 12 months of continual chipping away of our democratic institutions, intensifying of political violence, and the utter cruelty and chaos of this administration, not to mention the illegal occupation of other countries.
Oh, my God.
Then if you feel
we're
that
gonna
our, we're going to run them. Yes,
yeah,
we are. That's quote from our president.
We're going to run
yeah, parts of our country and our government, they really are unrecognizable right now, aren't they? When you're in the right place, we've got a great show this morning. I mean, we have an embarrassment of riches, Bill. I mean, we have our man in Washington, Brett Brosder, with the first of our segments on incredible candidates coming up for the 2026 elections.
All the key races that are going to turn America around.
We've got our amazing Vicki Woodard talking about a classic and polarizing banned book. And we also have, and I'm looking forward to this, a conversation between two ex-mayors of really important Connecticut cities. You guys want to talk about what it would be like to have to guide a municipality through the arbitrary federal funding cuts that are facing this country.
Well, look, I couldn't be prouder to have my good friend Ed O'Brien, who has taken the slings and arrows in the town, very much like Bridgeport, with a tax base that's not that stable, that's heavy on residences, in a state that relies so heavily on property taxes. And here we have a president who's chipping away at those funds that mayors rely on and stability that mayors rely on. So I thought it'd be great to have Ed in to talk about, you know, if you and I were back in the seats of being mayor, we're not plotting that.
Is there an announcement here?
No.
But we have maybe advice for mayors on how to handle this, but more importantly, to try to have the public understand how difficult it is to be mayor anytime.
Sure. It's the behind the scenes of how do you deal with a situation like
this. But when your own government is your enemy, when your own government is saying, oh, by the way, we're not going to have any cheaper energy coming from wind in New London. Poor Mike Passero, the mayor of New London, is counting on this revenue stream that's going to benefit all of Connecticut with green energy. And this president is bound and determined to stop a Mother Teresa project. I mean, that's all you could say. He's just nuts. So, Ed, tell me, like, let's say you have a lot, you deserve a lot of credit for helping to turn West Haven around.
Thank you.
You were bankrupt, as Bridgeport was when I got on the city council. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And how important it was to have friends in Washington that understood mayors.
Absolutely. Thank you, by the way, for having me.
We're so glad you're here.
It's a pleasure to be here. When I took over in West Haven, we were $16 million in the hole.
Yeah, we were 18, but you're a smaller city.
Yeah, much smaller city. And $16 million, so it was tough. And you need those federal partnerships to help you, you know, get through the budget process. Like you said, stability. Stability is key. You need that stability. But what we were able to do is, you know, not intentionally, but we had to bond that deficit.
Yeah.
That triggered MARB, the state oversight. They came in. Came in with some funds.
They called it for us. What they called it? It was different. It wasn't MARB.
MFAC.
It's another name. It was a state takeover.
It morphed into MARB. Yeah.
State takeover of your books.
Right.
Your spending and your taxing. The judge is going to tell you what you could do.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And there's tiers. There's four tiers. So we came in at the third tier, which is advise and consent, and they have to look over all your.
We jumped right to the head of the line.
It's not a full blown takeover. But with that, you know, they brought money. We ended my term with a $3 million surplus.
Yeah.
So the new person came in with a $3 million surplus, which
but
is
you,
great.
You did that because you had, well, you had did, a you're a smart guy. You had a gun to your head, proverbial, but you also had some support.
Right. And the, you know, the inside thing is we did have a restructuring plan.
I want to hear more about that. I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we have to go for a very quick break. We will be right back.
Told
with
you
Ed
there were
O'Brien.
A lot of ads.
A lot of ads. We'll be right back.
Great.
Wake Up with Finch and Kane is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the Voice of Connecticut.
And we're back with our special guest today, Victoria Woodard, who's going to talk about a banned book. Brett Brosder, who will be joining us imminently, about key races in the Democratic arena to return the United States back to some sort of sanity with the House of Representatives meeting regularly.
Hear, hear.
Swearing in new members when they're elected, not holding off, and holding the president, the executive branch, accountable. Because remember, as we enter this 250th anniversary of our country, the second article is about the president, but the first article, as designed by the founding fathers to make Congress first branch among equals.
That's right.
Article 1 was about Congress holding the feet to the fire of the executive branch so they would not become too powerful.
What a quaint thought.
It's a quaint thought. And it's amazing how it lasted until this, Dennis the Menace got in there and broke all the china. I remember Ed O'Brien, mayor. He and I were sitting in
Mayor of West Haven.
Yeah. As former mayors, we were sitting in Richard Blumenthal's office in the Senate, Congressman Murphy's office at the time in the Senate, and Senator Murphy, just became senator, asking for help from cities. And the cities can rely only on property taxes in Connecticut, so they're hamstrung. But when you want to do safe streets, or you want to redo your sewage plant, or you want to do a big energy reboot for energy conservation, you look towards federal grants and state grants. You can't do them without it. Your property tax base is just not big enough.
Right, not to speak of education. I mean, education is a huge part.
Well, and now there's no Department of Education.
Right.
So student loans are going to be, I guess maybe Venezuela is going to run our student loan program. I don't know, because we're going to run Venezuela. Maybe we could send our students to the Department of Education in Venezuela, since we're running that, and they have a Department of Education.
I think I see a pattern here.
Oh, my goodness.
We've got so much to talk about today. We're not even going to talk about Venezuela, but it is beyond surreal.
Next week.
Right.
We'll try to get Jim Himes in here.
Let's do it.
Tell us
he
what's really going on.
Ed,
tell us a little bit how you felt as mayor in looking to the federal government for help. We did it together. But tell me your impressions about that and how important it is for our listeners.
I mean, you have to provide services, and the money has to come from somewhere. Mm. You know, really what it is, your federal tax dollars go to D.C., and then they're supposed to flow back, you know, in a fair way. You need those funds to supplement your budget. Otherwise, you just have to, you know, substantially raise taxes on the residents.
Why do you think the people in need in blue states understand that, but the people in red states seem to vote against their own self-interest? Do you ever notice that?
I do. And I think they understand it. I think they can't be that delusional.
No.
Well, maybe they don't.
It's just the sad part of
it. I'm happy to have been born in a blue state.
I feel like this is a question I want to ask Brett, if he's on the line. Are you there, Brett?
Hey, Melissa.
Hi. Good morning. I think you've been listening in, and we're talking to two really dedicated ex-mayors who really felt it was important to find funding other than in their own tax base to make sure that the social services that their cities needed got to them. So when we're looking at congressional races, when we're looking at people around the country, and we've talked about this before, you know, it is getting food on the table that really matters most to people. How are people reacting to, do they understand the message of, wait a minute, is my member of Congress going to be fighting for this to make sure that my municipality, my state is getting what it needs? I mean, is that a part of what's going to be, you know, salient during these upcoming 2026 races?
Yeah, I think it all plays into the affordability piece that we've been talking about, right? Where
got to be able to afford your property taxes,
right?
Exactly. You got to be able to afford health care. You got to be able to afford your property taxes. You got to be able to feed your family.
Yeah.
So, I think that it does. I think it all plays into it, and especially to both mayor's points that in a state with no county government, where every city has to fend for itself, and property taxes are the way to fund.
I was trying to steal those development programs away from West Haven.
Good luck.
I lost.
No, but that's
federal dollars are so important.
Yeah,
they are.
Yeah, and they're not flowing in now.
Correct.
So what would you be doing right now?
Bailey,
you're asking me.
I'm asking Ed. Yeah, I'm looking. Well, I'm asking Ed and Bill.
Yeah, no, I think right now you have to stay on top of your finances every single day. Never, ever stop advocating. I think you have to just kind of push, and the loudest voice wins. You just have to keep pushing along.
But I think one of the things we want to tell the listeners, Ed, is when they want clean water projects to fix their sewer system, if they want energy conservation, if they want early childhood education, if they want transit money, public health money, all kinds of programs, those have always been delegated to the state and federal level, implemented through the cities.
Right.
We know that we're not going to raise enough property taxes in Bridgeport and West Haven to rebuild our sewer plant. So Congress, for the last 100 years, has decided this is how we're going to fund this. Like said, the money goes to Washington and gets recirculated
back, right?
So that the worst sewage plants are fixed first and the water is as clean as possible.
Correct. Right. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but you have a guy who he wants to, you know, punish the blue states.
Yeah.
So it's just unconscionable that the people that live in those blue states don't, you know, are living through this problem.
And capping funding the property tax exemption at $10,000.
Right. Right.
I mean, for Fairfield County, anybody listening here, most of you are paying more than $10,000, and now you're paying taxes on your taxes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
So I always thought paying taxes on your taxes was kind of like
illegal.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe in paying my taxes.
It wasn't what the Republicans were peddling, that's for sure.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it does seem a little upside down.
So, Brett, we're excited to hear of the seats that you're targeting, and we've been teasing this out. Ed's excited. Victoria's excited. Vicky's excited. Melissa and I are both excited. Tell us the seats this week that you want to focus on.
Did we lose Brett?
Yeah, look, I know last week we talked about, and Melissa had mentioned Michigan, but in light of the ACA subsidies being the Affordable
the Tax Act, Credits.
The Affordable Care Act subsidies here, where there were four Republicans who broke rank right before folks before Congress recessed for holiday here, and as folks are coming back. You know, the Keystone State's so important. It's a swing state. And there are three Republicans from the Keystone State in competitive districts who broke rank with Speaker Johnson. And
for their survival, right?
So they are in survival mode here. And that is McKenzie in Pennsylvania 7. So think Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, 90 minutes from New York.
We love Allentown. Democrats. It's a landlocked Bridgeport. It's a landlocked West Haven.
So we're focusing on Pennsylvania today. We've got Pennsylvania 7. Someone's in trouble.
Yeah, Pennsylvania 7. McKenzie's in trouble. We have five Democrats vying for that seat right now. One who's a former federal prosecutor, all of whom are running what will inevitably be a competitive primary here.
Brett, when is the primary in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania has a later primary.
I think it's
so
May.
It's not like a...
Is it May?
It won't be California in March.
Okay.
Ed has a little unfair advantage, Brett, because he's been recruited to go down door-to-door for one of the candidates. So he's
In Pennsylvania 7?
In Pennsylvania 7,
oh, okay.
Yeah, Ryan Crosswell.
Oh.
Which is amazing, because that's what we hope to do with this show, is to let the listeners know through our website about the races that Brett has highlighted, but then also, how do you get involved? Now, we're going to encourage you to get involved on the ones we're going to restore the democracy in Washington. But, you know, that's up to you, the listener, to decide what side to get involved with. But civic engagement in these races, Ed.
Yeah, it's very, very important. I got called by the Crosswell campaign. I guess it's a very competitive in the 7th District. But he's the former prosecutor that resigned.
That Brett was just talking
about.
Yeah,
you're just talking about Brett.
So it sounds like they've really got a good ground game going already. They're an organized
they've
campaign.
They've made it into the WICC Wake Up Studios.
I'm supposed to be meeting with him for lunch sometime in January.
Oh, well, send him our best. Yeah.
Well, you got to get him on the show.
I'd love to.
We'd love to have all these people. All right, so Brett, we've got, you said, I think, five candidates, including Crosswell. Is that his
Crosswell,
name?
Crosswell, yes.
Vying for McKenzie's seat. What are the other districts we're looking at in Pennsylvania?
So the other district of the two, what I think is the most promising here is Pennsylvania 8, which includes Scranton. And the Scranton mayor, her name is Paige Cognetti, and she's fantastic. And rising star in the Democratic Party, and
hometown of the former president.
Exactly. She won her first race with a write-in.
Oh, wow. That's no small feat.
Incredible. Harvard MBA, mayor, she is good friends with our friend, Zycom Zaborabong, the former mayor of Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh, then she's got our vote.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and so, who is the incumbent in Pennsylvania 8 who's in trouble?
Brezhnin.
Say that again, sorry.
Rob Brezhnin.
Brezhnin, okay.
He is right now best known for promising to ban congressional stock trading, and then he sold his healthcare stocks and voted to cut healthcare same week.
What a lovely nice little story. Little vignette. I think that tells you all you need to know about him.
Well, at least he finally got religion.
You might want to stop and scram.
Yeah.
Does Mayor Cognetti have anybody primary challengers?
She has a couple primary challengers, but she is far and away ahead of the pack in terms of fundraising and institutional support.
And sounds like she's got the goods, in your opinion.
She's fantastic. And the third seat here would be Brian Fitzpatrick's seat, which is Pennsylvania 1.
Mm-hmm.
He has $5 million in the bank, calls himself bipartisan, but this is a seat that Harris won. Mm-hmm. And the former Bucks County Commissioner, Bob Harvey, is running.
So this is what city is this
Bucks County?
It's Pennsylvania's Philadelphia suburbs?
Correct.
Okay.
So it's a little bit like Fairfield County in their voting patterns, a little bit. Maybe they're 10 years behind us in their conversion to blue.
So,
yeah, and look, it's a Republican plus one seat, but it's where Harris won.
Yeah.
So in a wave of a year like 2026 should be, it is very much a seat that's in play.
Well, was it the woman vote that carried Kamala Harris in that district, just out of curiosity? Or you can't really tell?
I think
we've... I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I'm looking at the time, and I think I would love to hear about this and hear more about who exactly Fitzpatrick is up against in Pennsylvania 1, but we have to break
for the news and weather.
We will be right back with Ed O'Brien, Brett Brosder, and Vicki Woodard on WICC.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Finch and Kane. WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
We have a lot to talk about this morning. Melissa Kane back here with Bill Finch on the voice of Connecticut, WICC, with our guests this morning, former West Haven Mayor Ed O'Brien and Brett Brosder. We have on the line our man in Washington, and we've been talking about seats that are potential flips in the 2026 election. And we've been talking about Pennsylvania, the Keystone State. Brett, you were talking about Brian Fitzpatrick in the Pennsylvania 1, I think that's the Bucks County district, that he is in trouble. We would love to hear who's running against him.
Yeah, the key candidate here is Bob Harvey. He is the Bucks County commissioner, and he's been endorsed by Governor Shapiro, the former Democratic nominee in that district, Ashley Assaz, and many others, and has a great shot running in a tough district here.
You said it was a Harris plus one.
Yeah, Harris won that district, correct. And it's a Republican plus one.
A Republican plus one, sorry.
Voter index scoring, which is kind of a...
I should move there. Sounds like a good deal.
it's interesting to me because so many of the districts I know that we're looking at to flip have really scary numbers, let's call them. And I think when you look at something like this, where clearly there was an issue of people being on the line, perhaps it's gone Democrat in the past, you know, this would be kind of an interesting bellwether to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, and Ed, you know, we were talking before we went back live here about Connecticut has so many safe Democratic seats, and yet we see primaries, especially in the first district with Congressman Larson, who's been a friend of mine for most of my life, and I certainly support him, but he has two interesting challengers. Do you think that when we have challenges like that, does it water down our... Look, we're trying to focus citizens' attention on races where they're... Like, you're going to go to Pennsylvania, go door-to-door.
Right.
But what if those same volunteers were attracted to going after John Larson? Doesn't it seem strategically bad sense at this point to do that?
You know, I think everybody has a right to run, really. I know that's kind of the basic, simple answer.
Well, I helped you when you ran against your establishment
I hear what you're saying, Mayor. Yeah.
And I mean...
And I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Thank you. It was great having you. You know, I love our congresswoman in the 3rd District, Rosa DeLauris. I consider her a personal friend. But I do think maybe it's getting time for term limits in the House.
You know, when I ran for Congress in 96, I had a donor who will remain nameless because I think he went to jail. But he wanted term limits, and I didn't for reasons we've talked about. But I said, you know what I do think we need is timeouts. So 5 terms in the House, you have to take a term off.
Mm-hmm.
3 terms in the Senate, that's 18 years. You got to take a term off. If the public wants you back so badly, they can always bring you in. But they've had a chance now to see what another person can do. And I do think that mixing up things is good. But we also do have to remember, like, the institutional non-congressional people in Washington stay there for their whole careers. Well, until Trump gets elected and he fires everybody.
And that's the continuity. So I agree with you, Mayor O'Brien. I agree that term limits generally make sense in every political position.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get back to the question that I think was concerning me and probably concerning a lot of other people, which is, you know, in a time of upheaval, when you don't want to lose one safe Democratic seat, what do you do when you've got people primarying someone who you know is safe? Now, I don't think this counts in Connecticut. I think that Larson, who I adore and have worked closely with on gun reform, I don't think if Luke or Jillian were to win a primary, I don't think we would lose that seat.
No.
So I'm not concerned about that.
Right.
We would lose
20-something years of seniority. And
we would lose seniority.
Yeah.
And that's also something to be discussed. And, Brett, I'd love to bring you in on that question as well. What happens when you lose that seniority? How much should that weigh on what somebody's thinking about who they're voting for?
It should weigh on voters a lot.
Okay.
Especially to parse this out, that's a seat that Democrats will keep.
Right.
It would take something crazy to happen.
Exactly. Right.
For Democrats to lose a D plus 12 seat. that being said, having somebody who has senior leadership in office, whether it's Rosa or John, it's just so critical for voters to keep that seniority, regardless of how great the other candidates are.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And that's a very valid point. And as Bill said, we're going to have all of them on. We would love to hear from them. Where John has been such an incredible champion is I believe Social Security.
Well, I collect Social Security now, and all our listeners out there who collect it, let's remember that. But I think Connecticut is in a special place to understand the value of seniority. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm older and the oldest one in the studio here. They're going to tell me that. But when we switched from Dodd and Lieberman to Murphy and Blumenthal, we went from the most senior, most powerful Senate delegation poised to take over leadership positions in their next term to the least influential delegation in the Senate. We did that within, 2 years?
Yep.
I remember visiting Dick Blumenthal, and I supported both Murphy and Blumenthal. They're phenomenal senators.
That makes a difference.
Two of the best we've ever had.
Yep.
But with Dodd and Lieberman, we had invested so many years that we were finally, you know.
Right, but if we had term limits, everybody would be under the same.
Exactly.
You know, we'd all be playing by the same rules.
And devil's advocate here.
We got Vicky here, who is the youngest in the room.
I am. I'm the baby here. So let's think about. Take it out of politics for a second, and you think about people coming into their career for the first time, right? Everybody always goes in, well, you have no experience. how are people supposed to get experience and gain seniority?
Well, we've all been there, even though we're old, but we remember that rejection.
Sure, I'm not that young. But my point is, how are these younger politicians supposed to get that seniority if they're not getting a chance until they're so much further in their careers because those seats have been held for so long?
Well, I think that we can safely say that the old adage, you know, you have to wait your turn in line, has been kind of shattered. I mean, look at what's happened in New York. Look what's happening around the country. People are not waiting their turn. They're saying, if I've got a message that is going to speak to people, whether I've got the right experience or not, and I'm not going to weigh in on that right now, but I'm going to do what I believe is right. And if I feel I can, this is a conversation for another show.
I know,
and
I think it's
important, right. It's an important conversation, but I think to, you know, Ed, to your point, and I'm pushing back against Bill here. I really love the idea of term limits, and I think it's, you know, I almost love it as much as I love campaign finance reform. I think both are real issues in our government.
And I think what you lose is seniority. You gain in new ideas, a fresh perspective. You know, and every other state will be in the same position. So
And I think look at the presidency for a second and take out of it. I know how we all feel about our current sitting president, but take that away from it and look at our two last presidents. And one of the critiques that we've heard nonstop is about their age and whether they're continued to be fit for the presidency and for the position. How are we supposed to get younger blood into these seats of power if there are no term limits?
Well, youth is one category. Youth, gender is another category. Race is another category that people make up their decisions based on it. But I do believe we've gone far too much in the direction of celebrity, right? I mean, Mamdani won because he was a much better celebrity and a much better messenger than Andrew Cuomo or Sliva. That's how he won. And he won on the issues. He won on economic issues of affordability, which I applaud him for. However, his experience in running the most complicated city in the world, perhaps, is slim.
And it remains to be seen whether he's going to be successful.
And we're rooting for him, right? How's New York go? So goes Fairfield County.
That's fair. We're gonna hold that. Oh, sorry, Brett. I know you want to say something, but I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because I'm looking at the time. We do need to stop for a quick message. We will be back with all of our guests
and a pearl of wisdom
and a classic banned book. We'll be right back on WICC.
Don't worry if you slept in. You're just in time for Wake Up with Finch and Kane. Now on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
I told you that would be quick. We are back. Brett, we've got Brett Brosder on the line. You were about to say something. We're talking about term limits.
Yeah, I would just, and we're talking about Mamdani, right?
Yes.
I think what it comes down to here is it takes time to learn the institution, the rules that navigate that navigate government, and you know where the bathrooms are. And so having somebody who's been there a long time while democracy is on the line is so valuable, and somebody there to mentor those younger members who come in at the same time. So I think that's where Rosa, John, and
absolutely
others are just so valuable.
Ed O'Brien's chomping at the bit here. He's got something to say.
Because I think it cuts both ways.
Yeah.
We have far right, House members that have been there a long time that need to go. They need to go. Yeah.
They should never get there.
It's something that goes both ways.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both ways, right?
But wouldn't it be nice if there was a balance of some really terrific members?
Think about how great this is. We're sitting here civilly disagreeing about something that has to do existentially with the future of our nation. No one's censoring us. No one's got a gun to our head. I mean, this is wonderful. Hopefully Trump doesn't get down to our level and stop us. But, you know, he has stopped this at CBS. He has stopped this at other places. And we're fighting not against Trump. We're fighting against the degradation of the First Amendment. We're fighting against the degradation of voting rights. We're fighting for the soul and the heart of our country on this show. And I celebrate it every week. I go home on cloud nine that we were able to talk about this every Sunday.
I always say, you give me hope. This show gives me hope. But I'm going to segue from what you're talking about, because you're right. We really, one of the main things we need to fight is censoring these types of conversations, right, and censoring what people know, what people are allowed to know, the history of this country, what we teach. And Vicky, you've got a book this week that has been banned, I don't know, numerous times, that really like goes
for the
way
better part
back
of a century, right?
Yeah, so
yeah, consistently
I'm,
since
yeah,
the 70s.
Would love to hear. Let's talk about that a little
all
bit.
All right. So this week,
the white nationalist Christian world do not like dirty words.
You know, it wasn't even so much dirty words in this one. So I read this
but they
week,
don't like dirty words. No, they've whispered that to me.
Well, yeah, they like to say them, just not hearing other people say them.
They so, live them.
We read A Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess this week, and I can say full-chested, this was my least favorite book that we have covered so far. I did not enjoy a single minute of this. I listened to the audiobook.
Must be an age thing, you know.
It might be. I'm just...
the youth, you know.
Yeah. It was a tough
one. What didn't you like about it?
A few
things.
Was
it the vulgarity?
You know, honestly, because of the abundance of nuanced slang in the book, the vulgarity didn't actually hit me.
Yeah.
That wasn't it. For me, it was more the content itself was a
confusing
tough read. It was incredibly violent, incredibly
confusing.
Harsh and confusing. Yeah. I said earlier before we jumped on the air, I said it took me probably halfway through the book before I even knew what some of the words meant.
Yeah.
I was Googling things.
Should have had a glossary in the first chapter.
A friend of mine who I run a book club at Mermaid Books with actually said when she read A Clockwork Orange, she wrote herself a little like dictionary so that she knew what she was reading. It's one of those books that you really, really have to focus on.
But that's
on
not why they want to ban it.
No. Absolutely not.
You're talking about fundamentally it was a difficult book to read because it was a difficult book to read, not because of any
so
other.
So why has it been, what's the pushback all these years?
So it's the, there is some of the objectionable language, sure, but really it's the violence. It's the question about morality and inherent goodness or badness. I don't like the word badness. It's a weird word, but inherent
based on
free
conflict,
will.
Correct.
So it's about a kid, really, this kid, Alex, who is making incredibly violent decisions. And he winds up in prison for murder and then goes into this experimental treatment to essentially remove his free will by forcing him to continually watch these extremely violent and disturbing videos, literally eyeballs taped open kind of thing. It's very graphic, so that he will physically get ill due to medications in his system and the content that they've forced him to watch when he thinks about or sees violence. The question of the book really is it right to take away your free will? Even at the...
Through force. Yeah.
Even at the, you know, rationale, if you will, of trying to make you a better member of society. All in all, I mean, I know I answer the question every week of who should read this book. And usually I say, you know, if you're old enough to be a character in the book, you're old enough to read it. I actually think differently with this one, right? Because this kid was, I think he was 14.
I never heard you use that measurement before. That's a very...
Oh, I have.
Yeah, I must have been paying attention to you.
I guess not. Bill's ignoring me.
No, I love that. If you're old enough to be a character in the book, you're old enough to read the book.
Because
but not with this one.
No, this kid was 14. And, you know, I have a child a few years away from that, and I cannot fathom a 14-year-old reading this book. Now, that said, do I think that it should be banned? Absolutely not. Again,
what age would you say? 21?
No, I mean, I'd 18? Say late high school.
Early college?
It sounds like in a, as you said, graphic and upsetting way. It kind of touches upon, as you said, free will and even the concept of like conversion therapy.
That's exactly
right. Brainwashing.
And brainwashing. I mean, those are topics people should be aware of.
And
they
at the time it came out, Manchurian Candidate was also relatively going to be on the scene soon. Mm. And these were all about government using its force, like I would argue Donald Trump has.
Well, right. State control is a huge theme in this
book. Use the media to brainwash people. And Donald Trump has done that. Other figures in history have done it. And I think that one of the things these books should never be banned for is that sense of free spirit that we're trying to preserve.
Right.
Right. The individual rights and the fact that government shouldn't brainwash people, shouldn't change them, Shouldn't use the force to squish out. That's why I don't believe in the death penalty. I think these people should not have ever been born that are doing terrible things. But to use the force of government to squish their life out like a bug is exactly what they're talking about in Clockwork Orange, Manchurian Candidate, where people, the government has gone too far.
Yeah, this book has been banned at various times in various places. Yeah. What's the status now? Who
it's
has
actually
spoken?
It's actually one of the top five most banned books in the U.S. in the last school year.
Wow.
So it is consistently being banned. Its first ban was in the early 70s. This book was published in 62. And it's also not exclusively a United States issue.
Yeah.
So it was first banned in the UK. And there were a slew of copycat crimes in the UK, which actually instigated their bans, which has not been one of the reasons here. But I thought that was super interesting. It's also banned in some places in Latin America. But what's wild to me is this has been consistently banned. I am proud to say only one time in Connecticut. And let me see, I did have that in here when that was. But it was in 1977 in Westport.
Oh.
It was removed from high school classrooms.
Well, that's horrifying.
And never since in Connecticut, which, you know.
I'm going to just assume there was a huge uproar and it was brought back.
Probably. Yeah. But it was at the height of when this book was being banned so frequently because it was really, really considered problematic.
I mean, look, it brings us, as Bill has been saying, it's larger than something like this book.
Yep.
It, you know, when you're talking about issues that are, you know, of things that are viscerally upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
Parents, people, you know, people recoil. I don't want my child to watch this, but it's not.
Public opinion can waver all over the place, wild swings. And I'll bring it back to the reason for this show. The founding fathers knew human nature.
Right.
They knew, and they made a system of checks and balances that could weather these storms.
Mm.
And eroding the system of checks and balances allows the whipsawing of public opinion of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody in Westport today would probably, except for a couple cuckoo birds.
Right.
Well, there have been cuckoo birds there. I mean, throughout Connecticut, Vicky's here, who have been pushing boards of education, towns around the state, to ban numerous
books.
But
when those people ran slates for boards of ed, they always lost.
Not always.
You know, we're not seeing that everywhere.
Where have they won? I think it's definitely
the whole Branford-Guilford thing was big.
That was a big one.
And they lost Guilford.
Yeah, there are some vocal book challengers who are taking some seats.
Well, just a quick advertisement for the wonderful city of town of Westport. Best library in the state.
It's a great library.
Beautiful.
I have library envy.
You should. It's the best. I was just saying to someone, I think it's the best library in New England.
It's incredible.
It should be a tourist attraction because if you go there, you will be blown away by the performance space and the podcasting rooms the special events
and the
rooms
programming
and the makerspace.
Yep.
People can invent things that save lives at this library. Yep. I mean, it's amazing. Right.
Yeah. You know, huge shout out to all of our public libraries, though, and our librarians. I can't express enough. Like, you do not decide to become a librarian because
you're going to make a lot of money.
No, that's absolutely not it, right? Like, it's a love of literacy.
You never get free time to read the books you want because you're working with everybody else.
But, I mean, it's incredible the work that they do and the advocacy and the fact that they are having to sit at these meetings and fight for our right to read regularly is so disheartening, but they're doing it.
And they're doing it
every day.
Librarians, the district courts in the United States, some very brave law firms.
Yeah.
People are standing up against this madness.
Those are the people. Yeah. And I'm looking at the time and I'm thinking, okay, if I had to pick what gives me hope, I agree with you, Vicky. It is librarians.
Mm-hmm.
It is those people who are standing up and fighting for our rights, continuing to stand up.
Well, I'm going to add to that the building trades who I work for, fighting for the living wage for working class people, and the trans community, the smallest minority in the United States being picked on by the most powerful people in the world. Hats off to all the trans people that are out there. Stay strong, stay true to yourself, because you're a role model for all of us.
Well, I got to say, this has been one of my favorite shows.
Hope,
yeah.
I think, like, you're right. People just standing up. And we need more people just standing up. And you would hope some of the House leaders on the right would stand up
a little. But you saw that in local government.
Yeah, absolutely.
firsthand,
yeah,
yeah.
We have a great library system. I'm learning
yeah. a lot from ex-mayors. I think that's where the knowledge is.
Right.
Yeah.
This has been an incredible show. I want to say thank you.
To
our wonderful Vicki Woodard, who always comes to us with important books that we need to know about and that should not be banned.
They shouldn't. No book banning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, whether you like it or not.
Zero tolerance for book banning.
And to Mayor Ed O'Brien of West Haven, thank you for your knowledge and for your conversation. And to our wonderful Brett Brosder, who joins us every week. He talked to us about Pennsylvania today. We'll keep talking. We're going to get this information out on our website.
What gives you hope, Brett?
You give me hope, Mayor.
He gives me hope.
He wants to come back.
You had to think about it, though.
We also want to thank our producer, Isabella, and Connoisseur Media, who allows Bill and me to wake up with you every Sunday morning. And most of all, we want to say thank you to you, our listeners, for waking up with us. I'm Melissa Kane. I'm here with Bill every Sunday. We will be back. We hope you have a wonderful Sunday.
We hope we give you a little hope.
Yeah, we're going to give you hope. Stay engaged and stay strong.